Browse through the average American closet or garage or attic, and you will find a mass of clutter. Brick-sized, museum-worthy calculators from the 1970s, old cameras and coffee makers, hulking exercise equipment that hasn't been touched in years, clothes that don't fit or are desperately out of style. We're a nation of pack rats, itchy to acquire, loath to relinquish. To have is to hoard. Merriam-Webster describes the pack rat as a bushy-tailed rodent of western North America that has well-developed cheek pouches and that hoards food and miscellaneous objects. The animals hoard because it's in their DNA. Maybe we hoard in part for the same reason. The impulse to hoard probably has its roots in our earliest days. There's a reason why we call our predecessors hunter-gatherers. It was only about 12,000 years ago that our ancestors were finally able to gather more than they could consume. Once that finally happened, people learned to trade things they no longer needed, extra portions of meat or ears of corn, for other things they wanted, a new hunting knife or a warm pelt. Over time, acquiring goods became an indicator of status. But we've not only been bred to prize new possessions, we've also been taught to want to get all of the value that we can out of them. And, in addition, many of the things we buy take on an emotional value. We want to keep them because they remind us of good memories or a stage in our lives. All of those reasons, symbolism, frugality, and emotion, sound practical enough. It's sensible to keep things that are expected to rise in value over time, or possessions that are particularly sentimental. So what's wrong with manifesting our attachment to our belongings by holding on to them? Apparent value, emotional value. There's nothing inherently wrong with feeling emotional about our possessions. In many cases, we do it with good reason. We all should have relics of our past and of our family's pasts. A great-grandmother's candlesticks, a grandfather's pocket watch, our own or our children's first pairs of shoes or baseball mitts, to the extent that it gives us pleasure or fulfills an emotional need. They teach us about our predecessors, inspire feelings of connectedness, remind us of who we are. Those types of possessions have a sentimental value that we, and hopefully our descendants, are right to quantify emotionally. But emotional value is finite. When pressed, we would probably part with many of these things if the reward were great enough. For $1 million, we could build shrines to our ancestors and have plenty left over, unless Paul Revere made the family candlesticks himself. That's an extreme and rather unlikely scenario, of course, but I offer it to make a point. Of course, many of the goodies we're hoarding away in our closets have no such emotional value, and for most of those, their value is diminishing every day we keep hold of them. We may feel that it's wasteful to discard things that are still perfectly useful and that we ought to keep them because maybe we'll get more use out of them someday. But what are the odds we're really ever going to? What the new auction culture will make clear is that we can and should generally only understand the value of what we keep by comparison to the other benefits we might accrue from those things if we could own them in another form, in cash or in kind. And as for wasting, in the auction culture, it's not the money we've spent on the things we're no longer using that we're wasting. It's the money that we could obtain by reselling them. This transition can be attributed to sweeping changes in the world of consumer goods that have dramatically impacted the way we should value our things. The cycle of innovation has reached warp speed, and durability is therefore no longer the primary source of value in so many of the things we buy. That's why it's important to start reselling the stuff we rarely or no longer use more often and faster.